myself again. But it's the only way you're ever gonna learn. You look back and it's all in the past.
Good evening and welcome to Steve Race True Crime Interviews. Delighted to see you. I'm joined by Cookie. And Cookie and I were thrown together last year, as many of you will remember, by circumstances beyond our control and by certain figures in the Newcastle area or further afield. But Cookie, welcome to the show, mate.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Good to see you. And the link for your channel is down below. So if you can subscribe to Cookie's channel, it will be good for you to do that. He's done a few walks around Benwell. I've been having a look at a bit of his content. And there's one thing about Cookie. He knows his way around that area and knows a few stories as well. We get on to what I guess a lot of people will be tuning into this for, let's have a little chat on about your life, Cookie. Where were you born and where were you raised, first of all?
I was born at Newcastle General Hospital, mm-hmm. you know, like every other Geordie. And I lived in Scotch Eaton. I was about 6, 7, and I moved along the Buddle Road, St. John's Walk, and that's where I grew up. Then I moved to Pipetrack Lane afterwards when I was in my teens, late teens. But I grew up with all them run there, all my age group, though. I didn't have the older ones so much, but all my age group, I did, aye.
What was it like living in the West End back in those days, Cookie?
Oh, it was proper rough. It was really rough. You know, there was a lot of bullying on the streets, a lot of fighting. All the kids, they were on the streets. All the kids were on the streets. There was a lot of alcoholic parents, stuff like that. A lot of kids that parents were villains, you know. So there was a big mix there, and it was kind of rough. Like, it was kind of rough, I gotta say.
What was it like for you? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I've got two brothers and a sister. At the time, I had two brothers and a sister. When I lived on St. John's Walk, and that, you know, my two brothers, he got into crime. One of my brothers was homeless for a while, and he's in prison now. Mm-hmm. So he's in a good place at the minute.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, from your perspective, was it a happy childhood?
Oh, aye. Well, my parents would punish us a lot. I did have resentment towards my parents, you know, because they tried to keep us in the house, in a way off the streets at times, and they just couldn't do it. I would sneak out the house at daft o'clock in the morning. I'd always be on the street. I'd always want to be on the street, thieving with my pals. It was like my second family. You know, on that street with my pals. Even though a lot of the older lads used to bully us a lot, but it was just the way it was, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you say it was a happy childhood, but you say your mum and dad, you know, clamped down on you. You know, what kind of jobs were your mum and dad doing? Were they working?
No, my ma worked in a fish shop, and my dad worked as a window cleaner.
Right. So both grafters. What school did you go to?
Reedwood. I went to Mary Trevelyan first on Scotchy Road, and then I went to Reedwood Senior School. And then because I'm dyslexic and that, and I couldn't read and stuff, I had a lot of problems at school. So I started stealing the teacher's handbags, and I started robbing the videos and the tellies and that in the school and stuff like that. And they sent us to the special school on Condigan Road called Oakfield College. And I was there for about 18 months, and I got expelled from there because I burgled it like a divvy. So everybody tried to help us, I pretty stealing up them and stuff.
You say dyslexia. I mean, did that really get diagnosed in those days, or did you find that out later in life?
I'm undiagnosed. Even now, I'm undiagnosed. I think I'm on the spectrum somewhere with a bit of autism at times, because, you know, when I look back on my life, and I've walked into situations that I've been totally unaware of and been in real danger, and I've put myself in them situations, and It scares us when I look back, and the anxiety that I get back off it these days is like, because it was so, because of the crimes and that, I went to so much extreme to commit crime for little money as well, you know, Steve, little money. And it scares us that I went to them extremes, you know, and it leaves us feeling loads of anxiety and all that now, you know, and.
Well, we'll come to those crimes, but just focusing on your youth before we get to that. So obviously you're at school, you've got a happy childhood, but you've got dyslexia, you've got a bit of autism. Yeah, you're not the best student. Did you leave school with any qualifications?
No, none at all. Nothing. Not at all.
Did you have an ambition or something that you wanted to do?
I just wanted to be a criminal. That's all I wanted to be. I remember at school, at Reedwood, there was this Asian teacher, because there was a unit for Asians who they'd come and because they couldn't speak English, so they'd learn them how to speak English. And because the teacher couldn't handle us in the class one day, I got put in her class because the headmaster and he one was there to look after us. And like she asked us what my problems were and not, and she sat down with us and started learning us how to read. And she was like the first one at school to like sit down with us and try and learn us how to read. And she says, I'll have you reading within a couple of months. Just come every lunchtime to the class and I'll teach you. I turned up that lunchtime and I don't know, she must have been late because I only stayed around for 5 minutes and I buggered off and never come back, you know. So, and then I got expelled from there, went in. But that was like the only time I was ever, like, someone sat down with us and tried to learn us how to read. I mean, my family did and what have you, that, but like, I just wanted to be out the house in a way, you know. I found it too hard. Don't know why.
What was the first crime that you committed? Can you remember? Was it stealing a packet of polos? Was it burgling the school? What was it?
No, I was on Benwell with my mother, bless her. And she took us into the hairdressers. And I must have been about 5 or something, 6. And I got caught with my hand in the woman's handbag trying to steal money out of her purse.
And how old were you then?
I didn't know why I was behaving like that. I was only 5, 6. I haven't got a clue why I was doing that. Like, to tell you the truth.
You know? Well, I mean, did you have any interests outside of school? I mean, were you into football? Were you into any sport?
Football. I always loved me football. I played football constantly in the car park. That's all we've ever done. You know, it was great. It was to play. It was skittles, and we'd draw a circle, and put a brick in the middle, and you'd have to defend that brick. It was like a half a dozen who were playing in the car park, defending my bricks. We'd do that every day. Or play World Cup singles, World Cup doubles, stuff like that. It was great.
Good stuff. Jumpers for goalposts.
Aye, that's right. Aye. I was in the football team. I was a keeper. I was a good keeper. Because I used to... Because you remember when the tune had the training ground at Benwell Village?
Yeah.
But I went up there with my pal when I was wagging off school and I got to see Chrissy Waddle, Peter Beardsley and Gaza all playing football. And Chrissy Waddle was in goal and they let me take a couple of shots and that at them. And then I got signatures and that was Kushti.
Class.
So that's so why I want to be in goal.
big Newcastle fan then, Cookie.
I am. I do love the tune.
Good stuff. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well a little bit later. So obviously your life's mapped out then in a big sense. I mean, you know, you're trying to dip a purse at 5 years of age. You go on to do all kinds of petty crime. You burgle the actual school that you're going to, and you know your life's mapped out. You want to be a criminal. You leave school. Are you still living at home then?
No, I was estranged from my parents by then. By the time I was 16. Well, I got expelled early from school, so and I was living at my pal's in Benwell, you know, and I used to stop at his every night, and we used to just go burgling, stealing cars every night, you know. I hadn't met Glover up to that point. It was it was a funny situation how I met Glover, because it's the first time where I started carrying knives and bottles of ammonia and stuff like that, you know. Because I started drinking in the Adelaide at about 16 years of age. And it was with loads of Scotchy Mad Dogs, that's what I'll call them, you know. And I can't really name names, but I'll tell you the story. And like, the biggest psychopath in the West End walked in the door at that time. I mean, he was from along the Portland End and stuff like that. And this kid was biting people's noses off and their lugs off and battering them left, right, and centre. And no one around War Area wanted out to deal with this kid, like, to fight him. Like, he was proper naughty. People know who I'm talking about. He was always mentally ill. Well, he come in the bar, and my ma and my dad were in the disco thing, and he started flirting with my ma, you know. So my ma moved away from him, and then he carried on flirting with my ma, so my dad had to say something. So he knocked my father out and started biting his lug. And so, well, all the, I mean, there were some naughty faces in the bar who were now stabbing and all that, you know, and all them just sat and frozen, done fuck all. Me, I jumped up and run straight out, and I booted the face clean off him. Loads of people jumped up, and ever since then, he was running around trying to get us with big, he was chasing us around with machetes, you know. And then Davey Glover got out of jail after battling the busy and doing these, I was thinking it was a 6-year sentence. And because I had been game, I had been like, I was going on about wanting to do armed robberies, and I had been digging some bits of loads of burglaries and stealing loads of cars and that. And I got introduced to Davey, and Davey says, I'll sort things out with this kid for you. Because he had two fights. Hey, Davey Glover was the only one who was mad enough to fight the bloke twice. That's how bad it was. And we got it sorted for us, but by that time I'd been tooled up and everything, you know, getting chased to put up this kid, you know. So that's why I first started carrying knives in the West End, and ended up knocking under with Glover.
What was Davey Glover like back then?
I was dead happy. He was always, he just wanted to be a villain. He just wanted to, he was violent and he taxed and stuff like that, but he was happy and he was a good laugh. Everybody liked him. They did. Everybody liked him, apart from the people who he taxed and bullied, like, and it was hard for me at times, because he has got mental health issues and he used to go off his head and that. And sometimes I get the brunt of it. But he never battered me out like that, like people say he did. And that. He never ever battered his, you know. He was like my big brother, you know. That's what he was like to me, my big brother. But on that West End, it was convenient for some people to have Davey running round, terrorising everybody. It really, really was, you know. And that's what he loved doing it. What can I say?
Yeah, you know? Did he come from a notorious family, Glover? We know the West End was full of families, the Harrisons, the Sears, the Conroys. But did he come from a big family?
He has got a big family. He has got a good family. The big Davey, his dad. Now he was a villain of villains, big Davey, you know. He everybody knew big Davey. And he was really respected, you know. Everybody loved Big Davey, you know. I was feared, but he was more respected than anything else. And like I say, he was a villain. He was a villain's villain. That's what he was, you know. It's as simple as that, you know. And he was Paddy's. Yeah, Paddy was his sidekick for a while, I believe. Then Big Davey went away at 7. And then he was meant to look after young Davey. And that's what happened. What happened?
So, from your perspective, you become friends with Davey Glover. You know, did you get into more heavy duty crime then?
Oh, And me, you see, nobody wanted to really hang around with Davey. I think I was the only one who wanted to hang around with Davey because he used to do mad things all the time, right from a kid. You know, he had this reputation of being really, I mean, he took a bait up. He was just a bear and he took the bait up, boy hostage, and tied him up in his room, and there was a big thing, you know, a big siege outside his house. He just terrorized all the time. You know, and the crimes, when I started doing the crimes, they only started to get more violent when it started to kick off, when Paddy had the Rick, when the war started going on with Paddy. That's the only time it ever really got violent, Wayne Glover. All the other times were about burgling, stealing cars, looking for good robberies. Yes, and taxing people. Well, burgling people's houses who shouldn't have been burgling. So, you know, that's just the way. But we weren't as bad. Davey was not as bad as what people say he was.
You've touched on Paddy, and I know we will no doubt be talking a little bit more about him as this podcast continues. But when was the first time you met Paddy Conroy?
I've just wrote about that as a gans. Mm-hmm. The first time I met Paddy Conroy, right, is one of my pals used to take his dog, his two dogs with Bruno and Zelda for a walk. And he used to get paid a 10-hour week to keep the yard clean and walk the dogs, right? Well, I was terrified of these dogs. I didn't like them, right? Zelda was a dangerous dog, and Paddy used to just let them roam the streets and terrify all the neighbours. He had all the neighbours on lockdown back then, man. Paddy did. Right? So I used to sit on his back wall at the top of Billy, at the top of Northbourne Street, watching me pal finish doing his chores, and then come back to mine, and I'd give me pal a couple of home brews with my father's, you know? So, well, this one day I'd been sat on that back wall, and that night Paddy's house got raided, him and his neighbours, and Paddy kicked off, went crazy, got arrested, ended up the West End police station. But he must have been expecting the police or something, because he had an ounce of solid, and he had got my pal to stash it in a skip, right? So when he got up the busy station, he went looking for his dope, couldn't find his dope. And he had me and my pal under suspicion, and I was only like 12 or something. And I remember being dragged into his bloody sitting room, and yeah, I was this big, huge, scary, angry man. And I'm like, I didn't even know what tack was at the time, man. You know, and he's questioning me about tack, and does my dad smoke it and all that. And I didn't have a clue. Years later, my pal apologized to this and says, Stephen, it was me who chored his tack back then, and I'm sorry you got pulled in. But, you know, it's just that was the first time I ever met Paddy Conroy. Years old, scary experience.
Did he know Glover then? Was he friends with Glover?
Paddy's...
grew up together.
Paddy was married to Davey Glover's wife's, big Davey Glover's wife's sister. Mm-hmm. You know, so Davey was about, I think Davey was locked, young Davey was locked out, locked up at the time. But big Davey lived on St. John's Road. Aye, that's big Davey, God bless.
Yeah, I met his dad quite a few times, and you know, he was old school.
Yes,
a lot of respect for big Davey Glover, yeah. Lovely guy. And rest in peace.
Villain him, like telling you.
Rest in peace to him. Yes. So that sets the story out with them. Now the Sayers family, of course, somebody who I've written about, I've done documentaries, hoping to get the film out there and start making that later this year. And the Sayers family, of course, are renowned in the West End. An old photo there of obviously the three brothers and their mother, God bless her, Yvonne. Mm-hmm. John, Stephen and Michael become very notorious in the West End, and the books are out there. You can go and read them, tried and tested at the highest level, Operation Sayers. I'm sure if you Google them on the Chronicles website, you'll find a lot of stuff on there. Some of it factual, most of it fictional. But you'll also find YouTube videos made by certain people, you know, basically just spouting a load of rubbish. Your opinion, though, of the Sears from your first meeting, have you met them lots of times or did you just meet them the once? How have you crossed paths with the Sears, Cookie?
I crossed paths with them once when I was in Durham prison. I had seen them in the nightclubs and I had seen them kicking about the West End, but I'd never bumped into them. I'd never been in that company out like that. The only time I was in that company was sitting at visits in Durham jail, and Stephen talked to us, and that was the only time I've ever seen them. You know what Paddy says about me and them meeting me and all that, that's just not true. It's not true at all.
Oh, so that's a lie.
He's trying to manipulate. He tried to convince me that they were wrong, right, and it would all right to turn against them in a way like that. And when I heard about the James English thing and all that, I didn't even know he was talking about me. I'll manage this witness onto the James English show and all that stuff. I didn't know he was trying to blag me into doing it. Soon as I start getting wind of it.
Well, let's talk about it. We've come to it. Let's talk about it. Okay. Paddy Conroy, for those of you who are tuning into this podcast for the first time, is a local villain, retired, of course, now. Somebody who has a reputation, it has to be said. Somebody who, I've had a run-in on numerous occasions online. He continues to make content about me, which is all slanderous and untrue. He believes that I've essentially run a smear campaign against him, which is a lie and it's untrue. And he now sits in a shed in the northeast, outside of Newcastle, making a lot of material about me and about the Sears family. And it has to be said about Cookie. He makes a lot of stuff about Video Craig and maybe Stu Armstrong. Crackhead Craig is a name given to a lad he used to work the door with, Craig Wilson. He's really just spent the last 8 months making content on a YouTube channel and building it up with a lot of slander and a lot of lies. And you got dragged into this all really, Cookie, by him. You ended up being, you know, paraded, I would say, a bit like propaganda when you see it in the war. A downed pilot gets brought out and put into a position. And at the time, I didn't know who you were. I've got to be honest. I remember watching you come on. I thought you were quite, you seemed intelligent. You seemed a good laugh. But I didn't know anything about you. I didn't know who you were. I didn't actually go and try and find out who you were. For a lot of time as well, Cookie, you were off camera. So, I mean, what led you to going up to the shed? Well, not say where it is. I don't want to dox him. I don't want to give any indication of where this person lives. So please don't give any information about that. But what made you go up and see him, first of all? How did you get involved?
Well, I went up because I could see him suffering. I could see him proper suffering. And I thought I could help. I thought that if I went up and I worked with him to try and work towards positive emotional resolve around these issues and salvage some of his reputation and then maybe move on to other things and start doing some offending behaviour stuff and giving back to the West End and stuff like that, because that's what I wanted to do, you know? And I thought Paddy could do that and it would be good for him as well. But when I got up there, oh, it was a scary experience, Stephen, to tell you the truth. It really was. You're seeing all these things about the Sears family. Sears family or naughty family, you didn't go on seeing them sort of things about them, you know? And honestly, times I spent 4 nights up there sleeping outside in a tent, you know, and it was it was scary.
Why were you sleeping in a tent?
Oh, because I didn't want to sleep in a caravan.
Oh, it's a caravan he lives in.
I didn't want to sleep in a caravan, so I slept in a tent.
Right. I mean, just out of interest, I mean, does he own that land?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. I think he's owned it for many years. You know, he loves it. He loves his land.
Is there a house there then, Cookie? Or is it just, does he just live in the caravan?
The house got destroyed with a feud, through a feud. So that's why the house is the way it is now. I don't think he wants to put it back together in case somebody comes in, does it again.
Was that destroyed in a feud that he had with somebody, or was that the previous
one? It was a quite recent feud. Well, just before he went up there, you know, and it was a family feud. What more can you say? The Conroys, right. And when the feud against each other, that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the video. I shared it again. I did share the video again the other day of him fighting with his sister, who, God bless her, has now passed away. You know, I mean, I got to know the Conroys quite well when I worked on the door. I always got on with them. I always, you know, and I still do. I still see, you know, numerous of them. There's many, many of them. Always got on with them. Always got on with the Sayers. Always got on very well with the Tams as well. So, you know, from my perspective, as a doorman, I used to do the job in the right way. But yeah, okay. So you get up there. You go up with the right intentions, because anybody, and please subscribe to Cookie's channel, because Cookie's channel's linked below. And when you see what the kind of stuff that Cookie tries to talk about and tries to say, well worth following him. So please subscribe. But you went up there with that intention of, you can see him suffering. You don't know the full ins and outs of it. You go up there, you have a chat with him, and then suddenly you see what he's going through. I mean, he sits there. And he just rabbits on about stuff which is coming. It's the first thing that comes to his head in the morning. I mean, he's smoking, isn't he? He says he's not smoking tobacco. He says he's smoking something legit. I mean, what is he? Can you say, Cookie? I mean, am I right in thinking that he might be pulling our plonkers?
Oh, he likes to smoke. Aye, he does. Yeah. He likes to smoke.
Okay, so he's not.
I think it's good for him. Mm-hmm. I honestly think it's good for him. You know. But he's suffering, man. He's definitely 100% suffering. The obsession has got it. He's got mental health problems. 100%, he's got mental health problems.
So this mental health problem is really brought on by himself. And where did this? So we will come back to you going up to the shed and the caravan. Where did this start then for you? I've spoken to you before, and it started in prison, didn't it? This obsession, this problem with the Sayers, it started in prison.
Yes, it did. Well, you see, when I was in Dunham Jail Hospital, I met the bloke who, Bob Stoker, that's his name. Is it Bob?
Yes.
Bob? That's his name. Right.
Robert Stoker.
Robert, that's right, Bob, right. Now, he told Paddy some information when he was in the Cat A Seg unit in Durham Jail, right? And when I think about, when I talk to him, this man was a terrified man. This man got slashed in a Cat A unit, and it was on lockdown. It was a jail within a jail, you know? And he was terrified, needing a really powerful ally, you know, and he fed something to Paddy, and Paddy was in a vulnerable situation himself there as well. Jumped on it. For some reason, he jumped on that, and he ran with that. Aye, there was loads of stuff going on in his trial and stuff, you know.
That information that he gave him, obviously, it was about the Sayers, wasn't it? It was which he believed was going to cause problems for the Sayers or whatever. And Paddy then chose to believe what Robert Stoker had said. And this comes down to something we've mentioned in Tried and Tested. He said that there was discs which claimed that these guys, the Sayers family, were police informers. Mm-hmm. Now, these discs have never, ever materialized.
Not.
So he trusted the word of somebody. He trusted the word of somebody in prison, and we all know why.
Who got slashed? Yeah. Who got slashed in a Cat A unit and was terrified for his life, and needed someone strong and powerful to protect him. And he thought Paddy Conroy was that man.
And he clearly wasn't. So Conroy has this knowledge. He starts bad-mouthing the Sayers then in prison, doesn't he?
He does, aye. He does. That's when he starts putting it out then.
What year would this be, roughly?
The 95.
Okay, so this is 1995. So bearing in mind, people, that those of you who are following this intensely on Conroy's channel, and, you know, maybe some of you on here believe what he has to say, he believes that this has been something which has gone on for 7 years that I have caused. This goes back to 1995. It's a long time ago, that, isn't it, Cookie? Mm-hmm. 1995.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, so he then comes out of prison and he goes on to McIntyre.
That's right. He goes on to McIntyre and brings it on top for himself and makes the situation 100 times worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he alienated himself from the whole of the West End when he done that, man. We want to ganyan him up by that. He made himself look to be a bully.
What was your views when you watched that programme?
Well, when I first watched it, I was still a bit naive and all that. And I watched it when I was in Grendon prison. And because my behaviour changed a little bit after that, and I ended up keeping us in Grendon longer because of that. For some reason, I got more aggressive because I believed more Paddy, you see. Because Paddy, I was all from Border Road. I was all mixed up and all that. I was with Davey. But now that I watch it a second time, after I've been educated properly, he's not kidding when the way him to ask who the last is to grab her by the head and say, "Your man, you're coming with me."
Mm-hmm.
You know? And he says, "You think I'm kidding?" He's not kidding. He did, TB. Aye. He would have done that. You know?
Yeah. So for somebody who regularly claims that abusing women is bang out of order and people should be driven off YouTube for it, that's the kind of thing he used to do, I guess.
Well, it come from his mouth.
It did, yeah. It's on the McIntyre programme. Watch it if you don't believe us. Yeah. The relationship then between him and the Sayers, the Sayers and the Conroy family was always very positive, I was always led to believe. All West End families, there'll be one or two maybe don't get on, but there was never a gang war, Cookie, was there?
No, never ever. Never ever was there a gang war. All the families got on like that. Sayers and the Conroys got on very well. You know, the Sayers and the Glovers got on very well. Big Davey. Everyone got on well. You know, it wasn't until the crap in the cat ear seg, and then Paddy start pushing out that rumours, that's when it all started. And the Conroy family didn't want to, the Conroy family, they're a rough family, they're a naughty family, but they're not like that. They're not like Paddy, getting on the way he does. I kind of believe when I sat there in that shed with him, talking about all their murders, right, and all the stuff, you know, and in and amongst all that, he's checking me out as well to see if he can get any reactions out of me to see if I was involved in two murders and a hit. He was looking to see if he could get some sort of reaction out of his, so he could maybe later turn on and say, "I think he was involved in them."
I mean, let's dissect this, and I've done this on other programmes, so I don't want to dwell on it too much. But the programmes that I've put out on this channel last year, and I said I wouldn't do anything else about them, but tonight is a little bit different. I've got you on to do a true crime interview, and unfortunately for those people who are tuned in, a lot of it is going to be about this particular person, and that's the way it goes. That's the way the cookie crumbles, if you pardon the pun. But the situation that we have here is that he is continuously coming out and making big statements. And in the programs that I've put out, I have shown beyond all reasonable doubt that he is not involved in any of these crimes. He's not involved in Operation Insight. Operation Insight is on my YouTube channel. You can go and search it and go and watch it. It's broken down into segments, 9 different charges on that particular case. And, you know, none of those cases involve Paddy Conroy. So he tries to say that he is being chased by the police. We have put the police onto him, or the Sayers family have put the police onto him, or Stephen has done this, or whatever. None of it's true. None of it's true. It's all in his mind. And he just seems to sit in that shed smoking drugs and just ranting and raving about it. And I don't understand why anybody would do that. Do you think it's because he's trying to stay relevant? Do you think it's because there's a narcissistic tendency, so he wants to have the admiration from those people in the chat who go and watch these videos? And do you think it's that? What do you think it is?
I think he's trying to create the influence that he had on the streets on YouTube. That's what I think he's trying, because he's lost it. He had a lot of influence on them streets in that West End, especially in that Bud Road and Benwell area. Mm-hmm. You know, in Elswick, Woolsett and Walk and all that. He had the place on lockdown, him and Big Davey, you know, they did. Mm-hmm. And his brothers and stuff and that, full respect. But they did. And the influence that he had, he could destroy people's lives with just flicking his fingers, man. You're all ranging, and that's it. Your life's destroyed. You got to move with the area, you know. That's just the way it was. And I think he's trying to recreate that on bloody YouTube, because he knows he can't do it in the West End now. Mm-hmm. Lost total respect in the West End. Now he's trying to do it on YouTube. And because his story can't sound convincing, because there's loads of things that have gone on for Paddy. He's had the police all out with him. But that's been due to him.
You say he's lost total respect in the West End. Is that because of what he's been doing on YouTube?
What, say that again, Steve?
You say that he's lost a lot of respect in the West End. Do you think that's because of what he's been doing on YouTube?
He lost it when he done the McIntyre. Mm-hmm. That's when he lost it. And then he might have had loads of Facebook friends and all that, you know. But amongst the villains, he lost it then. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just got worse and worse. And like he went quiet, what, six years or whatever. And then he's come back with a bang on YouTube. He's focused on you. He's focused on the CS. And he's not going to stop. He's not going to stop. Then he gets closed, dude. He's totally homophobic, man, the way he comes across on his YouTube and all that, man. I'm sick of him with his homophobic shit and that. You know, I've got gay people in my family and that, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's got non-homophobic like that. It's shite. You know, and I mean, the way he talks about some of the victims, Bullock's victim, Billy, it's disgusting the way he talks about Billy being shot.
Tell us a little bit about that. Who was that, Cookie? Because obviously there'd be some viewers who don't know who that is.
Billy Thompson was my friend. He Davey Glover's father-in-law. And whatever happened, it happened, and he ended up getting shot and losing both his legs off Bullock. Got shot off Bullock in the Granger. And Paddy brags about it. He brags about it and laughs. This bloke's got no fucking legs, man. That he's fucking laughing about it.
That clearly upsets you, Cookie. I can see that. You've touched on Bullock. Obviously, he is, as we know, a good friend of Paddy's. There's, you know, somebody who has stood by him. I don't want to dwell on this too much, you know, because it's a sad story for the Conroy family. Obviously, there was a member of their family lost their life. It was an accident. And we know that Bullock was responsible for that accident, and Paddy forgive him. Is that the only reason, do you think, that they are friends? Do you think it's a conscious thing? I've always wondered whether that's the only reason Bullock stands by him, because I get the impression, and I've met Bullock myself, and I've met Conroy, of course, I often get the impression that it's rather through a guilty conscience that he stays with him. I can't imagine that Bullock thinks that some of the things that Paddy says and does are sensible. I can imagine Bullock being very like you, Cookie, in a lot of ways.
Yes.
He probably wishes he could get out of this particular hole.
Yeah, Bullock. This is my opinion of Bullock.
Yes.
And our Bullock doesn't feel like laughing and that about his victims, if he's crimes like the way Paddy does. Bullock doesn't feel like that, you know, but he gets on with things. And Bullock, from my opinion with Bullock, this is just my opinion, right? Is that it's made him ill, right? I believe that he's got to be having the breakdowns every now and then, and that's why he's not with Paddy and that all the time, because Paddy's really hard work. Really, really, really is. And Bullock, I don't think Bullock can cope with Paddy. You know, it's hard for Bullock because it really is.
Yeah, and I've explained why. And I don't want to dwell on that too much. And may that particular brother rest in peace. It was a horrendous story. I think it needed to be said because I think there's a lot of people who do watch the story. Sometimes scratch their heads and wonder why Bullock is even, you know, allowing this to go on. And I do feel that's a lot. I think that's a lot to do with it. And, you know, it's sad. And I mean, you know, Viv Graham is another person who unfortunately gets dragged into this whole sordid affair on YouTube. And of course, Viv, as we all know, was a doorman in Newcastle, top boy back in the day in the 90s. And, you know, obviously suffered an untimely end. No one has ever been convicted of that particular crime. But unfortunately for the family, not only have they got the misery of that, but they have Conroy making videos going out and saying, you know, that this has happened and that has happened and they've done this and he's done that. And, you know, he also then, it appears to me anyway, having done my due diligence and read a lot about it and written a lot about it, that he also tries to reinvent history. In one recent video, I heard him say that Michael Sayers had his jaw broken by Viv Graham. That's not true, is it?
No. I didn't hear that back then. I heard a lot what was going on with the Rick and all that. And that was, no.
It was is it my understanding that it was I'll not name the particular Conroy, but it was one of the Conroys.
It was a Conroy, yeah. Yeah. It was a Conroy. He was an awkward proper fighting Conroy. Aye.
One of the Conroy brothers, I had a lot of respect. And Paddy did nothing about that, did he, to Viv?
No. There was confrontation about it in Durham, I think. But Paddy and I think Davy Glover stood with Paddy. And that's all I heard about it, and that was it.
It's interesting that, though, because
put one out like that
is the polar opposite to what he tells people on his channel, which is that essentially Viv Graham did what he told him.
No, I don't think Viv Graham done what he told him. Listen, man, I don't want to speak. Paddy got nicked. And Scotchy, Paddy Bullock and Davy got nicked in Scotchy because I got sent down to the shop down there. They get money off him. And when I went in, I just thought I was going to collect money. But I was getting sent into the bloody shit pot, shit storm. And the shopkeeper pulled out a big bat and smashed it up the thing and said, you're getting fuck all. You can't tell them that Viv Graham's going to be here in 10 minutes. And if they want out, they come see Viv now. So I went and told them, and they all flew down. And they all got arrested because apparently there was guns involved. You know, and that's the way it was when Viv come into the West End, unfortunately.
Did you ever serve any time with Paddy?
In jail?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No. It's interesting because Geordie, you know, again, says when I was in jail with Paddy, he was a wreck. He didn't leave his cell. He just had little boys doing his dirty work. I mean, look, I've heard a lot of stories about him in jail, and it would be interesting to find out more. Obviously, I've heard the stories from Stephen, you know, that Paddy would go off on, you know, Rule 43, would be behind the door all the time. He wouldn't come out. That is Stephen's opinion. That is Stephen's view. That is Stephen's story. I was never in prison. I don't know. I can't categorically say that that is true or not. However, you know, there is a lot of untruth being said about me and about Stephen on there. So I guess Stephen is obviously going to come out and say what he wants to say. And from my perspective, it's all about two sides to the story. You know, on YouTube, Stephen has obviously said very little, but what he has said is they would come out and do a lie detector test. You know, and again, check the links out. You can see Stephen's not done just one, but he's done two lie detector tests. The questions, the relevant questions which Stephen were asked were, have you ever been a police informant? Has Gil Smith ever been your police handler? Have you ever worked for any law enforcement agencies? Has DC Henderson ever been your police handler? Have you ever been a police informant for NCIS or any other law enforcement agencies? And have you ever given information personally or by a third party to any law enforcement agency against Paddy Conroy? Now, Stephen passed both of these lie detectors. And Paddy, of course, had two lie detector tests. One, I dissect in a video, which you can find out, Paddy Conroy's lie detector test. The other one, nobody can seem to get a copy. Paddy can't get a copy. Revelation Films don't seem to be able to have a copy. Terry, the lie detector guy, only keeps them for 12 months and then destroys them, so he doesn't have a copy. So, to be honest, the first lie detector test, he passed with flying colours. The other one, maybe he should take it again. Maybe that's what he should do. But what I want to ask you is quite simple. You know, from Stephen Sayers' point of view, he's passed his lie detector test. Then, you know, surely that means, you know, he's innocent on all of those questions asked, Cookie, you would have thought.
He's done it twice, hasn't he?
Yeah, to all, and those were the three questions. Those six questions, there was three in each lie detector test. And those were the charges that Paddy was throwing at him. So, you know, one
live.
He did.
He put the video on and everything. Yeah, Paddy hasn't done out like that. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't Paddy go and do something like that?
Yeah.
If Paddy wants to start proving stuff, then why doesn't he do that? Instead of doing everything behind closed doors? No. Stephen passed two lie detector tests on this issue, and I think that's more than enough for it. He didn't even have to do that, because look what Paddy, look, everybody can see what's going on for Paddy. He's trying to pin murders onto people left, right, and centre. What's that all about? Because he's justifying that, because he justifies it by saying the enemies are grass, right? That's how he tries to justify what his behavior to everybody else, right? But he can't prove none of that. And then you've got Stephen coming on doing two lie detector tests, and what's he proved on that issue? Fuck all.
With Davy Glover, obviously, as time went on, it was proved that he was a police informer. One of the bones of contention that Paddy has is the paperwork, which has circulated for many years now, which is a letter from an MP. And again, if you go to our videos, you'll be able to click the Google Drive. You'll be able to download the paperwork and look at it for yourself. On there, it claims that Conroy was also an informer. Now, I can only go off what I've seen. As somebody who writes books and somebody who researches things, if I'm writing a book from one side of the story, I can only go on what I see. And I read Phil Berryman's book. I didn't produce it. I didn't write it. I read Phil Berryman's book, The Wacky Backy Boat. And he quite categorically states on more than one occasion in that book that Paddy was an informer and that he was the one who got him nicked. After reading his book and seeing that was out there in the domain, and then seeing this paperwork that I was provided as part of, you know, the Operation Insight paperwork, which I was led through, and through the operation which led to Stephen and Michael being put away for blackmail. I've got to be honest. I felt that it wasn't a toss of a coin. It wasn't something which, you know, I couldn't prove beyond all reasonable doubt. It's there in black and white for me. So it's there. It's out in print in another book. It's alluded to in another book as well by another well-known crime author. And subsequently, when you write a book, you put it down there. And it's, you know, it was signed off by the solicitor when the book was written. So I was quite comfortable and competent by putting that out there. Now, clearly, he disagrees with that. What's your view? We know Davey was. We've seen the paperwork from Davey's cases, and it's out there in the public domain. Do you feel Paddy was an informer or not?
I'm unsure. I'm totally unsure about that.
So there's an element of doubt then,
because of the high murders on people's cases and all that. It undermines them completely. You know, I mean, how do you profile? I mean, high profile gangsters like Paddy and that, right? How do you have a police intelligence war? How do you really have a police intelligence war? And get
let's dress it differently. Then you give us a fair answer on that. Would you say sitting in a shed a couple of times a day, openly accusing people of murders on the internet, would that be classed as informing?
Aye.
Fair enough. Well, that's an answer, and that's it. You don't need to embellish on that. You said aye straight away. So I would say it is as well. I would say that is informing. Whether those people have done those things or not, I think that is the right answer to the question. Obviously, the other bone of contention he keeps bringing up. I've seen many videos where he talks about, you know, the incident which saw something downloaded on the computer, something which he put out in the public domain. Again, we'll be very careful how we'll put this across. But there was obviously something suspicious, shall we say, downloaded on the computer. He then went out onto social media and made an announcement about it. As we know, then Stephen Sears, who was also on Facebook, attacked him, called him a few names, and Paddy then went to the police. He got him arrested. He made a 5-page statement. He says that that's okay because it was accusations of a sexual nature. So it's okay to get somebody nicked like that. Did he ever speak to you about this case at all? Did he ever say what was actually on his computer? Did he mention that in passing?
He did talk about the case. He didn't mention what was on the computer. It was just a bit of spam. It was just a bit of spam that he opened up, seen it, called his missus over. Get rid of that. And he got rid of that. And then he says, so I done a lie detector on it just to clear things up a year or two later. And that's what he said about it.
Cookie, why would anybody do that, though? I mean, why, and I've made this point again on numerous occasions on different podcasts when I've talked about it. If you get sent something on your computer, right, and I think we've all been there on various, you know, whether it's on Facebook or whether it's Instagram or whatever, you might get something, mm-hmm. and it's a suspicious message. That's it's true. From an account which you don't know. Mm-hmm. It could be, and generally speaking, they're so obvious that mm-hmm. There's a picture of some, you know, girl. It's got a weird link. Nobody in the right mind clicks on that cookie. You just delete it. What he's done is he's clicked on it and it's come up on his computer, and whatever's been on there has been on there. And that's it. You you get it off your computer, you delete it, and you move on.
That's right.
You don't go onto Facebook and tell everybody, tell the world that you have downloaded something like that. And then you don't go and take a lie detector test for it. Am I being stupid, or is that just is that just crazy?
I don't know. He's obviously had something. He's felt he's had to prove by having to take a lie detector. By wanting to take a lie detector test up about it and all that, you know. Adam now, what's going on there with our lad? You know, he sees that that's what it was. I hope it was, and that's that. You know, but call me. He quite easily called me a bloody bacon to try and manipulate me and call me a bacon and all that.
What was that about, Cookie? What was that about?
Just trying to manipulate us. Just trying to manipulate us to shut us up and to manipulate us. Because I don't know. Maybe he thinks there's something true, that I'm hiding something or whatever, I don't know, right? But he's not manipulating me, that's for sure. And, right, you know, I just can't believe you call us a fucking bacon. Fucking grass, and a cunt called us that as well.
Was that just because you weren't doing what he was, is that just because you weren't doing what he was asking you to do?
Aye, because he couldn't manipulate this the way he was, and then he's carried on afterwards. I shouldn't be talking like this because I'm being quite aggressive, because it is what it is, Steve. It is what it is. But I didn't really call us a bacon. Mm-hmm. There was no need for it. And then make it worse, you call us a grass. And I've never grasped him. Never grasped me, cunt.
He makes a lot of claims about Don Graham's farm. It's the first time I'd ever heard of it. What is all this about?
Don Graham's just a really creepy murderer who done something really bad. And I met him in Durham Jail right after he got his sentence. He's a creepy, horrible man, and I cannot see anybody wanting out to deal with him. You know, He was so proud of what he had done. He had the bloody newspaper clippings all over his wall. And he's asking me for advice on how to deal with his life sentence. I says, you can take them doing off your wall for a start, mate. Don Graham's a disgusting human being. You know, who needs desperate reform for it. That's how he'll ever get any peace.
Just again, for those watching at home, don't tell us who Don Graham is. I've got to be honest, I had no idea who he was, Koopy.
Don Graham called himself the self-called Prince of Darkness. He killed his lover and stole 300 grand off her. Then, on top of that, because he was making out she was still alive, he then started stealing the parents' bank accounts when they died and that. And it come on top for him, and you know, he's ended up getting arrested for the poor woman's body's never been found. And he's sitting in there proud as punch, giving it all a big in the Prince of Darkness. He's a disgusting human being. Until he stops behaving like, until he gets reform and gets some peace, and he can stop being a disgusting human being and take responsibility for his behaviour. And Paddy just jumps on that because it's creepy, it's horrible. And the CIA says, oh, no, your family, you know.
I've got to be honest, though, it's just fantasy. It's fantasy, Cookie, that anybody would, you know, would claim that there's, like, it's almost like, you know, a Nazi prisoner of war camp. He's almost trying to make out that it's Belsen. And I think one of the explanations was that it was old pit shafts, and that there was cars buried on top of each other with bodies in the boots of cars. I mean, it's like something out of a film. It's ludicrous, isn't it?
Well, it's one of them bloody... I've been up there and had a look, because he got us to go up and had a look.
Right.
There's two pits there, but The reason why he's jumping on the Dawn Graham thing, right, is because he heard, he's been years ago, over the years, he'd been heard a rumour that a certain person was buried down a pit, down Durham somewhere. And then in 2012 or something, Dawn Graham gets done for a horrible murder where he's a proper creepy, horrible man. And so he's jumped on that, and because his farm's in Durham and he's got pit shafts on his farm. So that's so that's why he's jumped on that, because he's got pit shafts on his farm.
Is this about building his YouTube, do you think? Is this literally just about keeping himself relevant?
I think it's just to try and get as much influence as he can. Like, so because that's what he thrived on all them years ago. And for all them years, he was living like a king in the West End. You know, and then he went and got himself into loads of trouble, right? End up kidnapping, torturing someone, ends up in jail, fucking. And he gets fed shite in that jail off a bloke who was in a really desperate situation. Steve, I can't stress enough, right? It's very, very high security environment. These cat ear segs, you know, like in Durham and that, you know. It's very hard. For someone to get near you and do that to you, it's a hard thing to do, you know. And someone got to that kid, got to that Bob, and he thought he was going to get killed before he got out of jail, man.
Just getting round to the escape that Paddy had out of the prison van. You know, he keeps mentioning that he met Michael and Stephen. Michael and Stephen seeing Glover after the escape. What was the story behind that? Has he ever talked to you about that?
No. He's brought that round things to try and get us to like give myself a jolly or something and see something stupid. You know, but I'd not like that now. I used to be years ago, because part of the thing years ago was put loads of lies out there, and then they don't know what you're fucking. They now you up the ship, but they don't know what. So muddy the waters as much as you can. So he was trying to get us to give myself a jolly and see it, and I fucking nah. And then it was the two murders, but somebody got shot in the head. Two people got shot with a two-two gun, and then there was attempted murder on someone with a 2-2 gun, and he thought that I was connected with that somehow. Luckily, and I fuck all about out like that, you know. So you could see from the reaction that I didn't know the bullet, and it was a waste of time trying to high out like that on my toes, you know. Started on a different angle. Paddy's very clever. He's very clever. And I can't believe he called us a fucking bacon.
It's Britain's Sorry, United. Britain's United says, what do you know about the claims he ruled to get 50 to 60% of his jail term? I mean, that is another thing. Look, you've been in jail, Cookie. You know the score. The Sayers, whenever they've been sentenced, they've always got over the recommendation, sometimes severely over the recommendation for the crimes that they've committed. Mm-hmm. Conroy seems always to have had reductions. Now, again, that could be because, and this it could be because he's worked as, you know, worked for as an informer. I mean, reduction on sentence usually means one thing, Cookie.
It is. It is. And I mean, it does all stink for me, right? Right. I mean, look, when Bullock went up on the bridge and started protesting in the bridge when Paddy got 6 years, and then 8 months later, I got out. You can say that's suspicious as well. You know what I mean? A gangster where you had people protesting on the street. Protesting on the street. Right? That much influence. That's like the Craze had, like that sort of influence on the streets. Right? He had the same kind of influence. And then, and he guns up for a big, kidnapping torture trial. And only gets what? 10 and a half years? Right? Someone like that's looking at 25 years. You know? Unless the torture wasn't as bad as they're making out it was. If the torture was as bad as they're making out it was.
It's interesting. It's interesting to hear your perspective on that. There's a few comments. Few comments on here that I'm going to read out. William McKenzie says, Steve, what do you think about Paddy saying you were best pals with a beast? Yeah. Just don't believe the things that he says. Seeing he got an email about it. Love your channel, mate. Thank you, William. Emails from who? A lot of that email, I got an email from this one and an email from that one. You know, you genuinely just cannot believe a word he says. In life, we reap what we sow. Life was good in the old days. Young criminals were called delinquents, but nobody got hurt. But youth has excelled beyond belief, and respect isn't a word youth use. Says, do the right thing, which is great comment. He says, Steve, no matter what you do or say, Paddy will always have issues with the world, and we are all in it. You can hear anger and desperation in his voice. He will be never happy no matter what. And then also goes on to say that... Paddy was a bully when we were in youth prison, but my brother knocked him out with one hit and he never bothered us again after he came round. He is still an angry man and very jealous with it. Thank you for your comments. Me says, Paddy says you're getting arrested over an email evidence. Not going to happen, I'm afraid, me. I did watch the video before I came on just to see if there was anything new or anything relevant. I've kept me word. I've said nothing for 3 months, not watched a thing, but I did watch that one tonight and surprise, surprise, it's the same old stuff that just rehashed and said in a different order. And just to confirm, if you buy Every Boy's Dream, which is the book that Jamie Boyle wrote about me, you'll find that it wasn't an all-girls school I went to. It was St. Anne's School in South Shields, which was formerly an all-girls school, but then admitted boys in 1979, of which I was one. I've never performed as a drag queen. I'm sorry to say that it's just a perverse sexual fantasy of Mr. Conroy's. He did, however, I did, however, play a pantomime dame in 1988 for Billy Fane's touring pantomime company at Christmas, which was a paid job for Red Kite Productions. That, of course, is in Every Boy's Dream, which I'm sure is where Mr. Conroy got that particular fantasy from. I did visit Broadmoor Hospital between 1991 and 1995 to see Ronnie Cray. You can very easily find out that conjugal visits were not allowed at Broadmoor Hospital, and all visits took place in a visiting hall with members of the public all sharing visits in the same room. So sadly, another fantasy of Mr. Conroy's, where I'm dressed in drag, making love with Mr. Cray, I'm afraid, are fantasy. I also visited Reggie Cray in Maidstone, Gartree, Wealdstone, Nottingham and Wayland over the course of 10 years. At no time were conjugal visits allowed. I would visit Reg in a public visiting room like all other visitors. I tended to wear a suit in the early days when I visited the Crays, but then I just reverted back to wearing normal clothes when I grew up and realised that I didn't have to do that. So from my perspective, never went in drag, never been a drag queen, never been gay, nothing wrong with that. But I'm afraid that is all just a perverse fantasy in Mr. Conroy's mind. And, you know, if he's going to lie about that, people, what is he going to lie about? That's what you need to ask yourself. And if he's going to call Cookie on a public forum like YouTube a nonce, when everybody knows he's not, what else is he going to lie about? It's as simple as that, folks. That is what this was all about tonight. And his bullying methods and his bullying tactics don't work with me. I've said this for many, many months now in response time and time again. And his little followers, like that little man in Borough who keeps making his mouth go and saying daft things and putting daft polls up on his YouTube channel, who then, when he's off his nut, makes snide threats to people and then removes them when he sobers up and comes down. That's the kind of people who surrounded themselves with Mr. Conroy. The birds of a feather flock together. The wrong'uns flock together. Look at the people who are supporting him. Look at the people who are supporting him in his chat who have all got domestic abuse, criminal records. Those are the kind of people who are surrounding themselves with him. People like Cookie and subscribe to his YouTube channel have walked away from him. You've got to ask yourself why. Because they've woke up and smelt the coffee. They've realized that this guy is a paranoid mess. Sitting in a, as you've heard it from Cookie, sitting in a caravan. Doesn't even have a house. Sitting in a caravan on land that he owns. Driving himself mental. His wife is ill, which I've referred to on this more than one occasion. He should be looking after her. And instead he smokes a bong. He drives people mad on YouTube. The guy needs taken off YouTube. And the guy needs to just grow up and live the rest of his life. Maybe he's getting a few salmon out of the river. That's what he needs to do. Instead of embarrassing himself, belittling himself, and taking himself into the realms of stupidity. Because that's where he's at now. He's a laughing stock. He's a Walter Mitty. And I hope that what we've done tonight will prove that. I will read these other comments out as well. Paddy has stated today that I will be arrested. He's a troubled person. You can clearly see that you are his nemesis. Shocked about the said porn on the computer. Look, it's there in the public domain. And again, I didn't write that article. He says I wrote it. I am in there. I'm quoted at the bottom as saying I gave information for the article that was written by somebody else from Vice. Bullock was in the court. The reporter wasn't in the court. I gave the reporter the information that Peter Mann had written down word for word. I then gave the legal documents to Vice. They can't print anything unless it's true. And they put it out there. I didn't write that article. So again, that's another lie. Paddy stated today that I'll be arrested. And I mean, that's not going to happen because that is over an email that was basically put to me from Bernard O'Mahony. And I sent it to John Faisonfield, a.k.a. John McLean, the criminal underworld. And John has shared it with Paddy. And he shared it with him months ago. Today, I've seen his video before we came on. He's saying that I only got that email today. He's had that before. It's another lie. But that email clearly shows that the crime writer, he was the one who sent the email to me stipulating what happened when he was at the house. It's all there for everybody to see. Check the documents out. Go to the Google hard drive on our videos. We're going round in circles. And I said I wasn't going to do this, but because we've got Cookie on, I thought it was a good opportunity just to clear a few of these things up. Question for you there from UKPI. Did Cookie fear for his life after breaking into Paddy's pub?
I did when they got a hat of his eye. But because he took us to his house, I knew he wasn't going to proper torture us. So I felt half safe. But when he got a hat of his, I didn't feel safe at all. You know?
There you go. That's the answer to the question. The Crazed Gangsters Behind Bars, great watch on Amazon Prime. Thank you, Original Dave. If you've watched it, please leave a review. It's gone down a storm. People loved it. It's still in the charts as well, which is fantastic. Derek says, there's no point going around Scotchy for a walk around. There's no left of it, bud, he says. Too Many Fools says, what do you think of John grassing you up to Paddy? He didn't. I asked him to pass it on. I've got a great relationship with John. John's a really nice guy. He got stuck in the middle of this whole situation, and he's tried to mediate, but unfortunately it's got nowhere, and that's it, you know. I've told you folks many, many times on my channel, I personally would go and sit with Paddy and have a discussion with him face-to-face. I'm more than happy to do that. If there's something that I'm wrong about, I'll say that I'm wrong about it. If he's got proof. But the problem is that all of these things that he comes out with and all of these things he says about me or about Stephen Sayers, he has got no proof. Go through my book, Every Boy's Dream, and read it. See the way that he's warped the stories to suit his own sexual perversions. And that will tell you all you need to know about that guy. How can you trust anybody who does that? How can you believe anybody who does that? And like I said, those people, some of them who are moderators in his chat, Google their names. Google their names and see what they've been up to in their spare time. None of them are faultless. None of those people have got clean criminal records. Some of them for abusing women. Some of them for stalking women. Some of them for hitting women. And that's the kind of people you know, you lie with a dog, you get fleas. And that's unfortunately what a lot of those people are doing. He's attracting those kind of people. And it's very sad to see. And there's too much of this going on YouTube. You know, there's far too much of it going on. Who did that person threaten? I'm not going to put that on screen. I'm not going to say it, but I don't think it takes a genius to work out who he actually threatened. Yes, and good news, Cookie. We were getting beat 1-0, but at halftime it's two. Just after halftime it's 2-1. Chris Wood scored and Bruno scored with a back heeler. So good news on the football front. Stick it up, Ralph Hasenhüttl and all of the red and whites down there. Let's talk about your channel, Cookie. Let's finish off on a positive. You've got your own channel. Subscribe, please. It's down below. What is the point of this? Because you've obviously got a lot of knowledge about the area you grew up. You've got a lot of passion for it, and you've got something that you want to get out there. So tell us about it.
Well, basically, a lot of the consequences that happened to me, were bad, but not just the consequences that happened to me, but to the people who I grew up with as well, and I want to tell their story alongside my story so that people can look and see, you done this, you done that. That might look big and hard and all that, but look what happened to them when he done all that. And I want to start raising more awareness about what goes on in our British prisons. So I want to do more of that, because the prison system is a pile of shit that releases dangerous prisoners from dangerous prisons. And the only time they got out to say about it is when they release some sex offender from an open prison, and then all the lifers and long-termers get battered out with a heed with it all the time. And it's just wrong. So I want to raise more awareness about what's going on in the prisons and why there's no rehabilitation and why we've got loads of crime on the streets and that. I share my own experience on my channel. I don't want to glorify it, even though sometimes it comes across like I am glorifying it, because there's real serious life-changing consequences behaving the way I did and the way a lot of my friends do. My channel is going to bring life to that. That's what it's about.
It's good. And I mean, look, I could have touched on your crime. I don't want to, because I know how much it affects you. I wanted to stay positive tonight. And, you spoke about that on other podcasts. The fact that I think one of the things that really struck me when I saw your talk and I've watched all your interviews was that, you're very remorseful. You're very respectful. You're very remorseful. You don't glamorize crime. And you have decided to turn over a new leaf, and everybody deserves another chance, Cookie. And that's what really impressed me about you when we came head to head. I'm not going to say the guy because I don't want to clickbait him and give him any publicity. But when we went on that particular podcast, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I mean, I didn't see it as a rivalry. I didn't see you as an enemy. Because I didn't know you. I just enjoyed it. And like, as we've got to know each other just on social media over the last few months, it's been a positive. And some people might think this is all a setup. It hasn't. It's literally just developed over the last week, hasn't it? We thought, well,
look. I had enough.
Yeah.
I text you, Steve. I must have been watching. I've not been watching Paddy's videos for ages because I had enough. And then I clicked on one and he was on a live and he was just talking about me again like that. And I had enough then. And that's when I decided to text you and say, no, I'll come on your show and I'll talk. And I'll see what I've got to see. Mm-hmm. It's only right. He's only spreading poison. He's not looking for positive emotional resolve. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm all about. Not that. Not what he's pushing. He's pushing poison.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He is, and he'll continue to do so until YouTube decide to essentially take his channel down. And if there is people out there watching who want to help, then you can simply report the videos. If you think that it's harassment and bullying, you can do that. You can report the channel. You can report his videos. If you think he's going too far, then please do that. It will help. I mean, we don't know how long that takes, how long a piece of string is. if he ever mentions my name, then I just hit the defamation button and the video gets removed. That should tell you all you need to know about the stuff that he's written about me or said about me, because ultimately YouTube taking them down because it is defamation by UK law. So it's as simple as that, really. It is as simple as that. It's great to have you on, Cookie. And I'm sure that I'll you know, because we do a news show actually once a week where we talk about current affairs. Last night we did a full hour news of the world. We did it on the war in the Ukraine. And I've got to be perfectly honest, I'd love to have you on just on one of those shows where we're just talking about different things, mate, because I think you'll have an opinion about everything. I think people enjoy listening to what you've got to say. And I think it'll be good for you to promote your channel. So you're always welcome on here. Make sure you subscribe to Cookie's channel. And let's hope, we've got about 15 minutes left. Let's hope Newcastle can get 3 points in the bag, Cookie.
Oh, they will do. Seven.
It'll be nine on the belt if we can just hold on. Even a point would do away from home. But yeah, if we can get three, even better. But Cookie, best of luck with what you're doing, mate. Let's keep in touch. And and if you can, it would be great, because I know you're still friends with him. If you can try and get Davey Glover at some point to pop on, it would be good. Maybe do something a little bit more positive for him as well, rather than what we did the last time. It'd be great to get Davey back on the channel. He's always welcome on here too.
Definitely, Steve. It's been good being on here. I've got a few things off my chest, you know, and I've probably made things worse with Paddy, but no, I've got to defend. I had to say something, and I come back on. I'd love to do a part two. And let's do some news of the world stuff.
Yeah, it'd be good to get you on, mate. Okay, I'll let you go, mate. Okay. You have a good night. Keep in touch, and we'll meet up for a coffee soon. Take care, Cookie.
Take care.